What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is
Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short.
Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hey, everybody, it's Devin.
Safety Edge strikes again.
And Kate. Welcome to Med Crimes.
Devin was just staring at me blankly like, I'm the one that gets us going every single fucking time we do this. And she's like
counted down looking at me like, fuck.
I was like, Chief, we're waiting on you. Let's count this shit down.
Well, shit. It's been 2 weeks and I like forget what my job is over here.
You know, that's a big problem.
I don't have many jobs when it comes to this podcast. I have one job.
She literally has one job, and that's to say, hey, everybody, it's Devin. Anyway, sorry about the aggression.
So
in
there's
that.
Intro. There's that. Here we are.
Happy almost holidays.
Happy almost holidays. Woo! Tuesday before Thanksgiving.
So exciting.
How many of you are listening to us while you're on a plane?
Ooh.
It's like a big travel day.
Yes, it
Tuesday
is.
Tuesday before Thanksgiving
it's
is a
huge
big,
one.
Like flight day.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow, everybody will be baking.
Yep.
Like Wednesday's a big baking day.
Wednesday, big cooking day, big baking day. I know that I've recently ventured into the rabbit hole of sourdough bread making.
Oh,
and I had
shit.
My first two successful loaves the other day, and they're already gone because they were both delicious. So anybody else knows the very specific science of making a successful sourdough loaf will very much be sympathizing with me right now in this moment.
I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
I mean,
thank
that's
you.
Great. I'm proud of you.
Yeah. I mean, I've made bread like a bunch of times. So I brought Brad like this piece of sourdough bread and he's like, wow, like great job. I was like, I don't think you understand
the complexity of sourdough.
I was like
sourdough.
Vibrating and he was like, oh, I guess I don't understand.
That's awesome.
Anyway,
that's awesome.
Here we are.
Hey,
love you guys.
We have a Patreon.
Yes, Carol Ann.
Carol Ann.
Yes.
Hey,
queen.
Carol Ann.
Hey, Carol Ann. What's up? Happy holiday. Happy fucking Thanksgiving,
Happy
Carol
fucking
Ann.
Thanksgiving to you, Carol Ann.
Yes, Carol Ann. We love us, the Carol
we
Ann.
We are so aggressive.
I don't know where is this coming
so
from.
What's her mythical creature?
Okay, Carol Ann.
You are the elf on the shelf.
You are the elf on the shelf.
You're welcome.
My elf is showing up in like a few days, so I really gotta get my shit together here.
I don't own an elf.
Okay, well, you really need to. I'm feeling so aggressive and so confrontational right now. Get an elf for your children. Get it.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I don't know why I'm so aggressive. Maybe it's this case.
I've already like decorated my whole house. We do two trees.
Yes.
I have one up. And I already feel like I have pushed the limits with my husband.
That's fair.
And yep. So I feel like if I show up with an elf, you don't have to touch it. I'll do it. I mean.
That's what she said. Listen. It is a very, some people go crazy with the elves.
Although
I don't.
There's one night that I have to be out of work, out of town. So
oh.
If the elf doesn't move that night.
So I feel like, you know what, rise. David, suck it up. That one night you can move the fucking elf. It'll be fine. You'll be fine. Just when kids go to bed, come downstairs and put the elf on a different fucking shelf. It is, you know what I mean? Like, it's that, it literally is that easy.
Turn it upside down on the same shelf and let
yeah.
it hang there.
Yeah. Oh, shit. The kids will be fascinated. It'll be amazing.
You can tell it's the last episode of the season.
We're very punchy. We are
ready to close out season 3.
We are.
So we have one last story.
Mm-hmm. We do.
And then we will be back in January.
And that's maybe why I'm feeling so aggressive, because this is an aggressive story.
Oh shit,
it's very aggressive.
Oh fuck,
we are talking about, Devin has no idea what we're talking
not
about.
A clue.
We are talking about the anthrax attacks of 2001.
No way. Really?
Yes.
Okay.
I know. I told I'm you the aggression. Intrigued. Okay.
Okay. So 2001. So we're talking, I was 14.
Mm-hmm.
So I obviously remember hearing about this, but we not detailed.
And I never.
I just remember was like, that's anthrax.
Well, that's the thing. But we all were like, white powder, anthrax. And honestly, it wasn't even fucking white powder. So I don't even know where that came from.
I don't know. But so I'm intrigued, actually, to know the details about this.
I was. You know, it kind of like came to me out of nowhere. And I was like, you know what? There was a lot that I did not know. And I kind of just haven't thought about it in years, which is terrible to say. But now that like I've read about it, I was like, oh, my God, like there's so much detail here that like I just did not appreciate in that because of the generation I was and like how young I was. And
I'm intrigued by this.
Was so like felt so disconnected from the whole thing.
So to that, was this before or after 9/11?
We will get into it. Stay tuned.
Oh, fuck.
Because it all kind of wraps into everything.
Okay. Wow.
So
heavy for right before
I'm
a holiday.
I'm telling you, I told you this is a very aggressive and crazy case.
So
without further ado. So trigger warnings.
For sure.
There are obviously biochemical warfare. We're going to be talking about people getting very sick and dying. There is discussion about things like racism, racial profiling, because it all does wrap in very heavily to the September 11th attacks. And there are even themes of suicide, which we will get into. So all of that.
I feel like I should have brought wine.
So to set the scene, the anthrax attacks happened during the fall of 2001. And if we remember what was also going on, the early fall of 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I really need to recap this. I'll just do a brief one for those who maybe have like a vague understanding of what's going on or people that were too young to sort of like
say, if you're early 20s,
and you don't necessarily remember what it was like during this time. So on September 11th, 2001, terrorists, linked to Osama bin Laden's Al-Qaeda terror network hijacked four airliners. Two of the planes crashed into our World Trade Center's towers in New York City. And a third crashed into the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. A fourth plane crashed into a rural area in Pennsylvania en route to its suspected target, which was the U.S. Capitol building. So in four, that was total four total planes. The attacks and their dramatic demonstration of American vulnerability created this like whole atmosphere of apprehension and mm-hmm. uncertainty. And it was just a very scary and uncertain time.
Yep.
And there was a time where we were all just like waiting for the next attack, and there were more attacks that were anticipated.
People are watching the first tower on fire.
Yes.
And in awe and shock and thinking it was an accident.
Yeah.
Until the second one was hit.
And
then it was like, okay, now this is deliberate.
If you watch the footage or documentaries about it, it's like a plane had flown into the first tower. We didn't really understand at the time, like what was, you know, what that meant, what was going on. Right. It was an accident. Something happened to the plane. We didn't
have how catastrophic.
Yeah. Obviously, people were dying. There were news outlets that had their cameras on the towers, and there was just smoke billowing out. And then, I mean, all the cameras are already on it, and you just see this other plane mm-hmm. come into view and just plow right into the other tower. And all of a sudden it hit everybody that this was intentional.
Yes.
This was not an accident. And there's always, you know, we all talk about those of us that are old enough to remember mm-hmm. this time always talk about, oh, where were you when you heard that this was happening? What were you doing? And I know what I was doing. I was a freshman in high school. I was 14 years old, and I was sitting in French class at, 9:17 or something in the morning, 9:20?
I was sitting in algebra as a freshman
yes.
in high school.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And the announcement came over the PA system, and we were all just looking at each other like, what? Like, this was unprecedented for our generation. We did not grow up in times of war in our country.
Correct.
And
we didn't grow up where people didn't trust each other.
Exactly. We didn't.
Like, that was the time that changed it.
That was something that changed fundamentally, I think, a lot of things for the U.S. How mm-hmm. we travel, how mail works, how everything right. works, how security in general works. Like, no, all of a sudden, nobody trusted anybody. And nope. it was a very scary and vulnerable time for mm-hmm. America.
I don't think I ever told you But I stayed at one of the hotels that one of the people that flew the plane stayed at on the 10th into the 11th.
No, yeah. Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's heavy.
My cousin was getting married. My cousin was getting married in the hotel that we stayed at.
Oh God.
Was where one of the terrorists had stayed the night before.
So that is a Boston. Very heavy, heavy situation. That's wild. All in all, between the attacks at the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and Shanksville, Pennsylvania, there were a total of 2,977 American lives that were lost that day. Mm-hmm. And remember, this also includes the heroes, the NYPD, the fire department, the surrounding area's first responders who all tried to save everybody others and got killed.
Everyone that was on a plane.
Yes, the people that were on the planes. It's the scale was just, it was unprecedented for our time, like I said. So, and as most of us remember, like I said, a lot of changes came from these attacks. So security around flying got really crazy and it stays crazy.
It
now
still
it's still crazy, but obviously for good reason. Like I remember... I remember the racism that came out of this and the profiling that was being done for people that were trying to enter the country and the what Muslim people went through in general and Middle Eastern people went through in general, because people did not understand or didn't care to understand at the time that these people that carried out these attacks were part of a very specific extremist group that the vast majority of Muslim people have absolutely nothing to do with. And it has nothing to do with the vast. This was a very isolated group of people. So the stuff that they went through, I mean, I remember, you know, kids of that descent being bullied relentlessly in my school. And just the stuff that was in the media at the time. It was a rough time for
I mean,
them.
And absolutely.
For everybody.
And it hasn't actually, and it hasn't fully gone away.
Oh, no, it hasn't. I still, you still hear stuff like that. And you still see stuff like that, you know? And, you know, it was just heartbreaking to think about, like, what people, like, went through. Just people that were just trying to exist and, like, have a life in this country. And were here, you know, like, legally and just, like, trying to be themselves in a country that was free where they could do that. And they were just facing so much scrutiny and like day to day, just like microaggressions. And it's just awful. So this is the climate that we're working with.
Everything's a little tense.
Everything's just a little tense. And just it's and this literally happens weeks, like a couple weeks after these attacks. So we are
I don't know if I realized that later on.
Like, I don't think I did
either.
As
the years have gone on, I don't think I realized that
it was so close.
I didn't
either. I didn't appreciate the connection, really, because I didn't...
We're so
young. I was
young.
14. I wasn't watching a lot of news. Like,
I'm
sorry.
We were only thinking about ourselves.
I really was only thinking about myself.
Makeup.
I was thinking about, like, the...
Bad makeup.
Really terrible makeup. The lip smackers, lip stuff. And...
I used to wear blue eyeshadow that made me look like... Somebody told me that I looked like the girl from the Drew show. What's that? Drew Carey.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
What's her name? What's her name?
Mimi.
Mimi. I sported the blue eyeshadow forever.
I am quite sure that I also wore a similar shade of blue. Oh, my God. I fucking love that for you. Anyway, I wish you would bust that out, like, honestly.
I think we'll pass.
I think you need some blue eyeshadow in your life, but it's fine. So, Robert Stevens, who worked at a tabloid paper, went to the ER on October 1st, 2001. So literally, I'm talking weeks. With an abrupt onset illness that caused vomiting and shortness of breath. When he was first hospitalized, doctors believed that he had developed meningitis or some other, you know, severe systemic illness, bacteremia from something. After the doctors completed a bunch of further testing, it was discovered that he had developed pulmonary anthrax, a pulmonary anthrax infection.
Whoa.
He died on October 5th, 2001.
Oh, goodness.
4 days after entering the hospital. And his death immediately set off alarm bells because this was the first recorded death from an anthrax infection in 25 years.
Oh, crap.
So before we get too much further, I want to talk about anthrax, what it is, where it comes from.
Now I got questions.
Well, I know. I did, too. That's why I was like, we got to break this shit down.
Please do.
Anthrax is actually the name of the infection caused by the bacterium Bacillus anthracis. Mm-hmm. And the infection typically occurs after inhalation, intestinal absorption, injection, or contact on the skin. It can happen through many different modalities. Symptom onset occurs between 1 day and even up to 2 months after the exposure. Yeah, it's very, very wide incubation period, like any huge variable there. And if you get the skin infection, it usually presents with like small blisters surrounding swelling. It can progress to like these big ulcers. That one is, the skin infections are not nearly as deadly as the intestinal and pulmonary infections.
Oh, right. I mean,
and yeah, the intestinal form usually presents with like diarrhea, abdominal pains, nausea, vomiting.
How do they know to test for it? Like, how do you test for it?
So what I'm assuming happened is that he had a like bronchial lavage because he wasn't breathing well. He had bad pneumonia that wasn't responding to whatever antibiotics they were using. They probably did a sputum culture.
Yeah.
And they did a PCR and were very surprised to see what grew.
Oh, wow.
Like a culture and a PCR, it may not have even come up. I don't think anthrax probably comes up on the PCR.
Right.
It's probably just came out of culture and they were like, what the fuck? So
like that's probably looking at the microscope, like that's a shape like, that I don't recognize.
Yeah, probably. I mean, it's something you don't use. Yeah, you gotta look it up. You gotta send it to for second opinions. That's one of those things that
is especially if it had been 25 years.
25 years. Uh-huh. Most people don't look at through a microscope and see Bacillus anthracis every single fucking day. You know what I mean? Like you said, it probably was quite interesting to come to that conclusion. So, the anthrax infection is spread by contact with the bacterium's spores, which they often appear in infected animal products. So, animals actually carry this bacteria in certain regions of the world, not everywhere, only in certain regions of the world, they will carry this. And then their waste, the stuff that they come in contact with, like their saliva, it can live anywhere, like sort of within those animal products. You can even like eating, you know, say like a pig that was infected. If you eat, you know, pork from the pig, you could contract anthrax that way as well. So actually, like in certain regions of the world, they actually recommend an anthrax vaccine for humans, and they can actually inoculate animals as well, like livestock. Wow. If you are exposed, not even confirmed, but if you are exposed to an animal that is like known anthrax positive, you are committed to a 2-month course of 3 different antibiotics.
Oh, Christ.
Yeah. Doxycycline, ciprofloxacin, or levofloxacin. So, two antibiotics. So, a fluoroquinolone and doxycycline. 2 months. So, this is like serious.
Yes.
Pretty darn serious.
Hello.
It's very rare worldwide. So, even like on a, you know, when it is prevalent and when it does happen, it is not common. It is very rare. But most commonly found in southern Africa and parts of Europe. Globally, like 2,000-ish cases per year. But about 2 cases per year in the United States on average. But again, at this point, they hadn't had it in 25 years. So almost 95% of the cases are skin infections because people are coming in contact when caring for livestock and whatnot.
Okay.
It's not always like the loose spores of the bacteria that they're inhaling. It's mostly like skin to skin contact.
Wow.
So this was immediately baffling to everybody. How the hell would this man have been exposed to anthrax, even if there was some infected animal somewhere?
What hospital was this? What region?
So actually, this was in Florida. This one was in Florida.
Thank you.
So they're like, even if he did come in contact with some animal that was infected, how did he get this? This was respiratory anthrax.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Like, how did that? Like, he would have had to have breathed in like a pretty hefty amount of just loose anthrax spores. And first of all, like, we've not seen anthrax in this area and there have been no other cases thus far. So like, do we need to be concerned about other exposures? Like, what the fuck,
and
bro?
What's going on? That like would be around livestock?
No.
Like,
he was a fucking like reporter for a tabloid.
Right. So like,
his
risk level was lower.
Yeah. Very, very low risk. So everybody was very confused. Like, what is going on here? And this man died from this. So they're like, this is serious. And like, do we need to be worried like more? Nobody had heard anything from his department about him receiving anything in the mail or getting any sort of letters or anything. So days later, individuals at ABC, CBS, and AMI become infected with anthrax, anthrax.
All from Florida.
So these aren't all from Florida. These are all over the country.
Okay.
Internal reports start circulating that individuals, the people that have gotten ill, are receiving these letters, these threatening letters with a weird substance in the envelope.
And they're all targeted the media, huh?
Yes, yes. And it goes beyond the media. Stay tuned.
Yeah, but like initially.
Yes,
like,
initially it's the media. Yes. And
they wanted this to get out there then.
Yeah.
Because...
Oh, they did. They did.
Yeah.
And the bulk of these letters were actually not recovered, because it's like, you open these letters and I'll read you the letters that we have. And I can see how somebody would open that and be like, this is fucking stupid, and throw it in the trash. Oh, it's junk mail. It's some asshole just like trying to, you know, stir whatever up, not realizing that, oh, that's not just like a, you know, dirt smudge on it. That's like a deadly, and they just toss it in the trash, and then they get sick days later and nobody makes that connection. But so we don't actually have a lot of these letters. Mm-hmm. We do have other letters, which we'll get into. So immediately, like, they're like, okay, if that is true, if these people have like opened these threatening letters and now they're all sick, like, this is bioterrorism, like, point blank. Mm-hmm. We need to figure that out right now, because everybody, again, is on very high alert because of the climate. Mm-hmm. Days later, after these other individuals at other areas, the New York Post and NBC report that they have received letters in the mail with a Trenton, New Jersey postmark. And the New York Post and NBC letters contained the following note. It has a handwritten date, and these are all handwritten and photocopied. So we do not have like the original pen writing. It's all photocopies. These were the exact same photocopy note that they both received, New York Times and NBC. It's dated 09-11-01.
Oh, come on.
9/11. It says in all caps, this is next. Take penicillin now. Horribly misspelling the word penicillin. Death to America. Death to Israel. Allah is great.
Oh my goodness.
So, they, again, both photocopies of a handwritten note, they were identical.
I'm kind of glad I wasn't an adult during this.
Kind of, because that's
even more
terror. I
feel like I
could
have asked my parents.
I had a little bit of like deniability and just like could
as
say...
We were so self-absorbed as a teenager.
I had no fucking clue that this level of shit was going around.
Yes.
But I now understand why everybody was like talking about anthrax. Don't open the envelope. There might be anthrax. You know what I mean? Like,
I get
that now. You know, I totally remember that.
We weren't getting
time.
A lot of mail as 14-year-olds.
No.
You know?
God, no. Exactly. Both of these letters contained a brown granular substance, which on first glance looked similar to dog food dust. You know, like the bottom of the bag, dog food dust. That's what it looked like.
Okay.
So, of course, with the verbiage in the note, it was made clear that either this was an extension of the 9/11 terrorist attacks, or an individual or group were mailing out these letters trying to heavily make it seem like it was connected to the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Either way, terrifying. So scary.
Damn.
So news breaks about this very quickly, and oh my God, the panic.
How do you think it got turned to being a white powder?
I don't actually know.
Like,
because it was in all of these reports, it was a brown substance.
Where do you think that came from?
I don't actually know.
Interesting.
And you know, actually, I do know, because there were, we'll get into it, but there were hoax letters that were mailed out that all contained like different colors, and some of it was like white powder. So I wonder if it just like, I don't know. So news breaks about this, widespread panic. Everyone's on high alert now, not only about like terrorists on planes, but now like we got to be afraid to open our fucking mail. Like what is going on? So two more anthrax letters bearing the same Trenton, New Jersey postmark were dated October 9th on the postmark, were received 3 weeks after the first mailing. The letters were addressed not to the media, but to two U.S. senators. Tom Daschle of South Dakota and Patrick LaHaye, or I'm sorry, Leahy, I think, of Vermont. At the time...
Why Vermont? They're so peaceful.
I know. Come on. All they want to do is fucking have their cheese and yogurt and enjoy their cows. Like, leave Vermont the fuck out of this, all right?
No one hates Vermont. Like, legit.
I fucking love Vermont, honestly.
No one hates Vermont.
We live a stone's throw from Vermont, and we fucking love you guys, okay? No, why Vermont? Of all the states, why Vermont? So, both of them, at the time, Daschle was the Senate Majority Leader, and Leahy was the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and both were members of the Democratic Party. And the Daschle letter, I guess, was opened by an aide of his who was opening some of his mail. The aide's name was Grant Leslie, and he opened it on October 15th, after which the government, like, once he saw that and, like, the substance in it with the reports that were going around, immediately the government mail service was shut down. They shut it the fuck down.
So, like, word had gotten out that things were coming, but, like...
Oh, yeah. It was, like, in the media.
It still, at that point, was just media people. So, like, this was the first time it got to a government office.
This was the first time, and the only time that we know of that was not a hoax,
right,
that something reached a government official.
Got it.
And the unopened Leahy letter was actually discovered in an impounded mail bag on November 16th. So it was discovered a little bit later. They didn't even realize that they had mailed this out until, like, a month later. The Leahy letter had been misdirected to the State Department mail annex in Sterling, Virginia, because apparently the zip code was, like, misread or misprinted. And so a postal worker there by the name of David Hose, actually, David Hose, ended up contracting inhaled anthrax, and he got very, very sick. So
did he live?
I believe he lived. Yes. Now, it was interesting, though, that the anthrax bacteria that was in these letters was a little bit different than the anthrax powder found in the other notes.
Oh.
It was finer. And it was much more concentrated and more pure, which was scary.
Yeah.
It means that these people or person is getting more sophisticated. Yeah. Yes. And so it was about 1 gram of nearly pure spores. There was no additives, no filler in it. It was like just pure bacteria. So it was very pure, very scary. Now, the letters, again, were photocopies of the same handwritten note. And again, on the top, dated 9/11/01, and it read, "You cannot stop us. We have this anthrax. You die now. Are you afraid? Death to America. Death to Israel. Allah is great." So a lot of the same things and some more information in these letters. How terrifying must that have been to, like, work as a government official and
those
be like
on YouTube are seeing my eyeballs right now. Oh, like, yeah. I'm not saying much, but I'm like,
no, the
I'm
faces
like,
are
the
facing.
Fuck?
Devin's faces are facing right now.
Oh.
Now, it's interesting because another interesting anecdote about this, the letters to the media, not the Senate letters, but the media letters, they noticed that some of the characters, most, and there were A's and T's in the letters, specifically, were sometimes either emboldened or, like, traced over, like they were being made to stand out. So it was suggested by some experts, actually still believe this, that there may have been some kind of hidden message or code in that, like, because of these letters. But it was all A's and T's, so none of it was, like, really clearly spelling anything. It was never really substantiated either. There was really nothing we could do to, like, sort of, like, link that. But to this day, there are people that claim that the letters contained the A and T characters sort of hint to specific genomes and strains of the bacteria, because they oftentimes use, like, different combinations of A and T to, like, identify those. So it's kind of interesting that it would be A's and T's and then anthrax.
Okay.
But also kind of a stretch. Like maybe they just were, you know, writing and maybe the photocopier made it look a certain way. We don't know for sure, but that's like a weird thing about the letters. So, first of all, who the fuck is doing this? And where can one...
fuck you.
Yeah, and fuck you. Like, honestly.
Second of all...
I'm telling you, you're going to be just as aggressive as me by the end of this. Fuck you!
Great.
So where can one just get, like, literal grams of fucking dried up anthrax?
Without dying yourself.
Exactly. So you cannot just, like, go find that shit in the wild. Like, that's not something that is a thing. So it was quite obvious that somebody had cultured and processed this. Or had taken it from a lab where it had been cultured and processed for studying or weaponizing. One of the two. So either way, not awesome scenario. So at least 22 people that we know of developed some form of anthrax infection. And 11 of them contracted the especially life-threatening inhaled anthrax lung infection. 5 died of inhaled anthrax. The ones that died are Stevens, the reporter that we read about first, 2 employees of the Brentwood Mail facility in Washington, D.C. So, I mean, just people that are handling mail, just going to work, trying to make a living. And you die because you handle an envelope full of anthrax.
Yeah. Wow.
Their names were Thomas Morris Jr. and Joseph Christine.
You've created mass hysteria.
Yeah, of course. I mean, this was like mass hysteria. And then 2 whose source of exposure of the bacteria is still not known, Kathy Nguyen, a Vietnamese immigrant and resident of New York City. And she worked in and around New York City, could have been handled some anywhere. Kind of mail thing or, you know, we don't know for sure. And then the last known victim is Otilie Lundgren, a 94-year-old widow of the prominent judge from Oxford, of a prominent judge from Oxford, Connecticut. Again, we're not sure where they contracted the anthrax. Which is equally scary. The Senate letter, interestingly, used punctuation and the media letter did not. It was completely without punctuation, but the Senate letter that was a little longer had periods.
Sending it to a senator. They wanted to like make it a little bit more formal.
Yeah, totally. The handwriting on the media letter and the envelopes, interestingly, was like roughly twice the size of the handwriting on the Senate letter and the envelopes. We don't really know why, but the handwriting was identical. It was the same. It was just a different size. And the envelopes actually had the ones for the Senate letters had a fictitious return address. So the return address on there was 4th grade, which is weird, like as if it's coming from the 4th grade classroom at a school. So it said 4th grade. Greendale School, Franklin Park, New Jersey.
Okay.
And
that poor teacher, first of all, when they were like investigating.
No worries, because Franklin Park, New Jersey does exist, but the zip code is for nearby Monmouth Junction, New Jersey. And there is no Glendale School in Franklin Park.
Okay, good.
Or so Monmouth
like
Junction.
Some classroom that they buried into.
No, it's not at all. Like, it was completely fictitious and made up just to as a space filler. That's all it was. But the postmark.
What about, I was going to say, what about that post office for Trenton, New Jersey?
So the postmark is still in Trenton. And investigators actually did this huge investigation, at a bunch of different areas in New Jersey. They they were very thorough, and they actually found anthrax spores in a city street mailbox at nearby Princeton University. Like they were testing mailboxes all over New Jersey to see if there was anthrax present in any of them. This is how in depth and crazy they. And that's why these people could have been that we don't know how they got sick. Could have, you know, come in contact with it, touched a fucking mailbox. Exactly. Shaken somebody's hand who had handled it and had it on their hands. We don't know.
Well,
so about 600 total mailboxes were tested for anthrax, which could have been. I mean, anything that they thought maybe could have contained a letter, they tested the mailbox, a bunch of them. And so the Nassau Street mailbox near Princeton University was the only one to test positive.
Oh.
Crazy. So the FBI obviously is very involved from the very beginning.
Yeah.
They jumped right on this. And so things escalated very, very quickly. Investigators believed whoever wrote and mailed the letters was doing so from the Princeton, New Jersey area or the surrounding area. They dubbed this the Amerithrax investigation, a contracture of America and anthrax. Super clever, FBI.
Whoa.
It involved...
What a code.
So fucking covert.
Didn't need to go to...
No.
What's the school?
Quantico? Yeah.
Didn't need to go to Quantico to figure that one
out. Good job, Devin. Mm-hmm. Good job. No. And the investigation, there were so many leads. It took years for them to go through all of this. And among all these leads were numerous letters, which initially appeared to be related to the anthrax attacks, but were never directly linked. And like either had different handwriting, different mm-hmm. substances, that it wasn't actually anthrax on them. Because people are trash, of course, so and there were hoaxes away? Everywhere. What's that?
So did it just go away?
Yeah.
Like it just...
Mm-hmm. It just stopped. Yeah, we'll talk about it. Huh. So all over the country, there were hoax letters mm-hmm. for months after this. Mm-hmm. And it was an utter fucking nightmare for investigators because people fucking suck and they can't...
Of course, copycats.
You have nothing better to do
yeah.
than to just send a fucking letter full of some powder to someone that you don't like and just... The amount of money, resources, time that they spend making sure that you're not actually a fucking... I hope all these people were found and went to jail because that really pisses me off. I fucking hate people.
Absolutely.
So, and then just as with any virus or bacteria, there are mutations and multiple strains, right? So they get started on trying to narrow down, okay, what strain of anthrax is this? Can we narrow down what lab this came from or region this came from if we have more information on its genome and things like that. So all of the available anthrax was tested and found to be from the same strain known as the Ames strain. And the Ames strain is a common strain which was isolated originally from a cow in Texas in 1981. And the name Ames actually refers to the town that the lab is in right now. It's in Ames, Iowa, that contains this isolate, and they culture it and grow it there for studying and for antibiotic testing and things like that. So they call it the Ames strain because the lab that owns it is in Ames, Iowa.
Okay.
The Ames strain was actually from Iowa, subsequently distributed to 16 other bioresearch labs within the U.S.
Okay.
So we know it originated in Ames. It's that strain, but there's also three international locations that have isolates of the Ames strain
in Canada,
Sweden, and the UK. Well, yeah, we're getting somewhere, but also that's a lot of fucking labs that have this strain, and it's even outside the country. How do we even know?
Sweden doesn't piss anybody off. I mean,
I love the Swedes. They were also able to radiocarbon date this isolate of anthrax to see like how old is it, like how, you know, when was it cultured, like whereabouts. So this was in June 2002 that they started doing this. They were able to establish that the anthrax was cultured no more than 2 years before the mailings. So this was not a really old culture. This was like 2 years before the mailings is fairly young.
Mm-hmm.
Later, the FBI claimed a quote lone individual could easily have created the anthrax spores for as little as $2,500 using readily available laboratory equipment, which I don't know that like a layman would be able to do that. And actually later on, they got some pushback for saying this because they were like, it kind of takes a more sophisticated than average human being.
You got to kind of know basic chemistry. More than just basic chemistry.
Yeah, you got to like know some shit in order to get to this level of isolating and distributing mm-hmm. a dangerous bacteria without murdering yourself in the process.
Right.
So scientists did put out a report that the material in the Senate letter contained silica, which ended up being discredited later on. And the silica thing mattered because silica is like a dust or a powder we often use in like powdered foods that actually is like in sawdust. It's basically sawdust. And they said that, oh, like there was silica in the anthrax, which means that when you open it, it would just float into the air and it basically would further weaponize the anthrax. Exactly. So initially this one scientist was like, I saw that there was silica in the anthrax, and everybody else looked and they were like, dude, there's no fucking silica in the anthrax. What do you mean? I think maybe he just I don't know if he wanted, if it was, he later went on record and was like, it was an honest mistake. I thought I saw something I did not see, which it is plausible, but also maybe he just wanted to get his fucking 2 cents in there and his own 15 minutes of fame and didn't think anybody would fucking double check his work. I don't know where that even came from.
Okay.
It was weird. Anyway, that happened. It was a whole big thing.
This whole thing is a big thing.
This whole big thing is a big thing with lots of micro big things all mixed in. So there's that. So authorities traveled to 6 continents, interviewed over 9,000 people, conducted 67 searches, and issued over 6,000 court subpoenas. Jeez. Hundreds of FBI personnel worked on this case at the outset, struggling to discern. The big priority was, okay, is this connected to September 11th attacks? Is this Al-Qaeda, or is this something else? We need to figure that out.
Meanwhile,
first and
we
foremost.
Hadn't killed Osama bin Laden.
Meanwhile.
For a while. He's still out there.
Oh, yeah. He was still alive.
We're
and kicking.
We're starting a war in Afghanistan.
Oh, hell yeah. Oh,
like,
this
been,
whole year was a absolute dumpster fire.
Yeah.
So they were able to come to the conclusion after this huge investigation outside of U.S. territory that these letters were not connected to Al-Qaeda or any other external terrorist group.
For real.
They were not connected.
No kidding.
So we are now. What? Yes, absolutely. Yep. Stay with me, girl.
Is it some sick fuck American that's just like, I want to fuck with you? Because I have a mental illness.
We
that, like,
still don't know for sure.
You're joking.
I am not. But.
You're joking.
We have a suspect, which we'll talk about. We'll talk about it. We still don't know for sure. So.
Was it the same guy who did the Tylenol murders?
Can you imagine if that were the...
Because we never found him.
It's funny that you said that, because that just popped into my head,
we
too. And
never,
I was like, you know
we
what?
We never found him.
No, we didn't. But we think we know who it was. We just can't fucking prove it. That motherfucker. And now he's dead. So rest in absolute fucking misery.
With new McValue at McDonald's, you get more than you expect. So after a long day, buy a double cheeseburger and add a McChicken for $1. Because saving with deals is always on the menu. With new McValue.
Prices and participation may vary. Valid for item of equal or lesser value.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. Workplace stress is now a leading cause of declining mental health, with 61% of the global workforce feeling it more than ever. You can't escape work, but you can take small steps to take care of yourself. A walk, some sun, a favorite song. Therapy is one of those steps. Ongoing support to build resilience for whatever your day throws at you. Balance is tough. Getting help shouldn't be. Visit BetterHelp, HELP.com today to get 10% off your first month.
The FBI and CDC investigation was hampered because at some point, somebody destroyed a huge collection of anthrax spores collected over more than 7 decades and kept in more than 100 vials at Iowa State University, including a bunch from the Ames strain, which was a huge bummer because a lot of scientists and investigators were like, there was a lot of data that we could have garnered from that. We could have figured out which group this isolate might have come from. If we had radiocarbon dated all of the isolates at the lab, we could have matched it. Then we could have narrowed down who had access to this isolate at that time. And we could have gotten a lot more fucking information if you hadn't done that. But some fucking bonehead did that.
Good going, bonehead.
Come on, Carl. Get it together. So... experts then start claiming that the attack might be the work of a rogue CIA agent or someone heavily involved in molecular biology or somebody who had access to sophisticated lab equipment and had a knowledge on how to culture and isolate bacteria spores.
Imagine that. It's
imagine
someone
that.
Who's not a layman.
Yes, exactly.
Huh, clever.
So in October 2001, as soon as it became known that the Ames strain of anthrax had been used in the attacks.
About 2002?
Sorry, 2002, rather.
Okay.
The FBI did have one major person of interest during this investigation.
Who, what, why?
Bruce E. Ivins had worked for 18 years at the government's biodefense labs at Fort Detrick as a biodefense researcher. And it was widely reported that the FBI was about to press charges on him, but unfortunately were unable to build their case to completion because all of their evidence was largely circumstantial. And the grand jury in Washington reported that it was not ready to issue an indictment, and they never got there. And we'll talk about why. Now, a gentleman named W. Russell Byrne worked in the bacteriology division of the Fort Detrick Research Facility alongside this guy, Ivins. And he said that Ivins was, quote, hounded by FBI agents who raided his home twice. He was hospitalized for depression and mental health issues at that time. And according to Byrne and local police, Ivins was removed from his workplace out of fears that he might harm himself or others. So he was quoted, this guy, Russell Byrne, was quoted to say, quote, I think he was just psychologically exhausted by the whole process.
I mean, you're like the prime suspect in a federal, federal crime.
Bioterrorism. Massive. Yeah, I mean, this would be a big deal. This would be a, obviously, your life is over when, you know. So there are people who are just, he said, quote, there are people who you just know are ticking time bombs. And he was one of them. This is a guy that worked with him that said that. So, on August 6, 2008, because again, this is a span of years, federal prosecutors declared Ivins the sole perpetrator of the crime and when U.S. Attorney Jeffrey A. Taylor laid out the case to the public. He said, quote, the genetically unique parent material of the anthrax spores was created and solely maintained by Dr. Ivins. But then other experts would chime in and disagree, including biological warfare and anthrax expert Merrill Nass, who stated, quote, let me reiterate, no matter how good the microbial forensics may be, they can only, at best, link the anthrax to a particular strain in the lab. They cannot link it to a human or individual. They can't make that distinction just based on the bacteria information. So at least 10 different scientists had regular access to the laboratory and that anthrax stock, and possibly quite a few more, counting visitors from other institutions, other workers. Like, there was a lot of people that had in and out access to the places that were supposedly securely keeping this anthrax. So it's hard to say that it was this one guy when there were a lot of other people that were perfectly capable that had access to it as well. And they had this same isolate in laboratories in Ohio and New Mexico. So how could they make that distinction? Exactly. So according to the report on the Amerithrax investigation published by the Department of Justice, Ivins engaged in actions and made statements that indicated a consciousness of guilt. He took environmental samples in his laboratory without authorization and decontaminated areas in which he had worked without reporting his activities. He also was seen disposing of a book about secret codes, which described similar methods in that book to those used potentially in the anthrax letters with the A's and the T's. Ivins threatened other scientists. He made equivocal statements to other people that worked there about his possible involvement in a conversation with an acquaintance. Like, he was flippantly saying things that were very worrisome to people and put together outlandish theories. Like, he would put together all these like outlandish theories in an effort to shift the blame for the anthrax mailings to people close to him. Like, he would blame purposefully people that he knew. And it's like, that makes it look worse, my guy. You can't do that. So understandably, the FBI is like, no, this has to be our guy. But also,
they're also like under huge pressure to figure it out. Because
It's been years at this point.
So they're under huge pressure for a culprit.
Exactly. We don't have a culprit. We don't have an answer. We got to pin this on someone.
Right.
So that the public can be reassured that we have the guy.
Right.
And can stop living in fear. So the FBI had said that Ivan's justifications for his actions after the environmental sampling, as well as explanations for all of the other sampling, contradicted other explanations that he gave other people. So, long story short, he could not give a straight story twice. Like, he would change his story every single time he was interviewed, basically. They could not get the same explanation out of the guy twice to two different people. Everything was very inconsistent. But he also had a lot of profound mental health issues.
Right.
He was hospitalized for depression, suicidal ideation. I don't know exactly what his diagnoses were. And unfortunately, as the FBI was mounting their investigation and mounting their case against him, Ivins died by suicide.
Well, that doesn't help his case either.
Oh, no, it does not. No, it doesn't.
That sucks.
It doesn't, but...
Wow.
However.
Okay.
After the FBI announced that Ivins acted alone, many people with a broad range of political views, some of whom were colleagues of Ivins, expressed doubts. Even other people that knew him were starting to come forward, and they're like, "No, I don't think he did that. I know that one guy said that maybe he did, but I don't think he did." Reasons cited for these doubts included that Ivins was only one of 100 people who could have worked with those vials.
Correct.
And the FBI could never place Ivins in New Jersey.
Right.
During that time.
Right.
They did not ever have concrete evidence that he was in New Jersey at that time.
Yeah. Kind of need
that. So that undermines the case big time.
For sure.
Big time.
For sure. Because you only had the one postmark.
Yes.
And that one mailbox. And
exactly. They could never place him there. They also, on the many raids on his house, never found any traces of anthrax in his belongings or anywhere in his house or in his vehicle. So where did he do this?
Right. Damn.
So it's really hard to say if this was just a man with a lot of mental health issues that was maybe a little inconsistent in his stories because he did not have the full faculties to realize what was happening, to cope with what was happening to him.
Or did he fall victim to such a pressured investigation?
Yes.
In his mental illness, he couldn't handle it.
Exactly. Exactly. So, in 2008, after Ivins passed, the FBI actually asked the National Academy of Sciences, the NAS, to conduct an independent review of the scientific evidence that led the agency to implicate Ivins in this. So, which is good, because they're like, listen, at least they're not just sticking to their guns and saying, it was this guy. We know it was this guy. They were like, you know what? Let's have an independent
consulting agency look at this,
and if they pick up on something else that we didn't, then or they can say yes or no, we can blame it on him, at least we'll know a direction to go. So the NAS committee did this huge investigation beginning in 2008. Finally, in February of 2011, they were able to release their findings. So I mean, this was a years-long investigation.
This is almost 10 years later.
Nearly 10 years after the attacks. Their report concluded that it was, quote, impossible to reach any definitive conclusion about the origins of the anthrax in the letters based solely on the available scientific evidence. So unfortunately, still no answer. So this report also challenged the FBI and the U.S. Justice Department. Isn't it crazy? This is I don't remember any of these details because I never appreciated the details as a preteen.
Of course.
Like, you don't look into that.
Correct.
I was worried about my fucking softball game after school.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
by the time that report came out and they're ending the conclusion, we're now 25, but we're like, who cares? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Like that, they got the guy 10 years ago.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Thought, but did they?
Apparently not.
The report also challenged the FBI and U.S. Justice Department's conclusion that a single spore batch of anthrax maintained by Ivins at his laboratory at Fort Detrick in Maryland was the parent material for the spores in the anthrax letters. So they're like, we don't even know if it came from this isolate, for sure, after reviewing everything. This could have been from a number of different, because again, that same isolate, they sent it to Sweden, Canada, Mexico. And 10 other labs in the States.
This is still freaky because, like, never figuring it out. Who did it?
Mm-hmm.
And what are you sitting on now?
Yep.
You know?
Exactly. This is just a very distressing situation.
I am learning so much.
I know.
Because you told me we're talking about anthrax, and I'm like, oh.
You're like, what?
We're talking about the white powder in the mail? Like, yeah. That's what I remember.
That's what I remember too. That's all I remembered about it. Honestly, I'm ashamed to say that I never, once I grew up and started caring about shit, you know, I never like just Googled the anthrax attacks to find out more about them, because once I matured enough to, you know, really want to know about it,
it was
history. To me, it was history. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And now I'm like, I just am like, my God, I cannot believe I lived through this. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we were alive during this time. This was insane. And in the aftermath, the attack led to widespread confiscation and, you know, like, for like, they shut down government mail for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so they confiscated a lot of U.S. mail. There were packages, letters for months and years that just never reached their destination because they would just look at them and destroy them.
Yeah.
Because they were like, well, I can't, I don't know. That looks sus. I'm destroying it.
Yep.
So packages, like bills, letters.
That I remember.
People just like didn't get their shit for a long time. For many people and businesses that had resisted the cultural shift to email, this was like the moment that things got pushed online, and everybody, like the online push was huge at this point. So there were huge mail disruptions. There was widespread policy changes on how mail was delivered and handled and how it could be safely sent without exposing employees. And it cost about $130 million just in cleanup for the U.S. Postal Service.
Oh.
Like, to go through and just clean their facilities to make sure nobody got accidentally exposed to something in the wake of the scare. This was a huge undertaking.
Mm-hmm.
And in short, I don't think we will ever know who did this and why. And in total, 5 people died. 17 others were confirmed to have been infected, or 22,
also,
I'm sorry.
I think I also thought that my impression of the, not that those 5 lives is not enough, but I think I felt like there was more.
There were,
based
it was
on
scary.
The hysteria as a teenager, you know, like.
Similar hysteria to the Tylenol murders, wherein, was it 5 or 7 people died? I feel like it was 7. I think it was 7, you're right. There were 7 people that died.
Right.
Which, again, in the grand scheme of things, is that a huge number? No. Right. Each and every American life matters.
Of course.
And it's devastating that it happened. I'm not discounting those lives that lost. But
with the hysteria,
it was the unknown.
Yeah.
The hysteria is about the unknown and the scaring of something coming into your home where it's supposed to be your safe place, like a bottle of Tylenol or a fucking envelope of mail. Mm-hmm. That is supposed to be innocuous and safe, and now it's not.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, that's crazy,
right?
Thanks for doing this to me.
You're
right
welcome.
Before a holiday,
are you feeling aggressive now,
I mean, I'm a little like, dude, where's the Tylenol people at? Where's the anthrax people at?
We gotta round these bitches up.
I mean,
put them on a fucking island and let them just Lord of the Flies it out until someone's
with their arsenic and anthrax.
Yes. Unbelievable, right?
With that, have a happy Thanksgiving.
Happy fucking Thanksgiving, pilgrims.
What are you thankful for?
I'm thankful that I now know more about what happened with the anthrax attacks, how terrifying it was, and I now have a better appreciation for what people went through that were a lot more politically and socially aware than I was at that age.
Absolutely. Damn.
And I'm so sorry to, like, those poor fucking families.
That sucks.
Bioterrorism. That is, the thought of that is terrifying.
That's my plug for the show that I used to love, you know, 24. Remember 24?
Yeah, I do.
I forget what season had the
bioterrorism. Jack Bauer.
Jack Bauer is a fucking badass.
This is not the first time you've mentioned Jack Bauer on the show. You don't remember?
That's amazing.
You said, I forget what episode it was, but you were like,
that's amazing.
You know, sometimes we just need Jack Bauer. I was like, Devin, do we?
Yes.
Maybe it was the Tylenol murders.
I hope other 24 fans know you know what's up.
There's a lot of you out there.
Well, that's it. We're wrapping up season 3.
Oh, I'm exhausted now.
So we will be back Tuesday, January 7th.
What are we going to do without you guys?
2025.
Oh, shit.
We will miss you, hopefully just as much as you will miss us.
I will
but
miss you
we
guys.
Will be looking forward to this time with our families and our precious young children. And we will be back ready to kick some ass on season 4.
Yes.
Have a happy, safe, wonderful Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
All holidays, Christmas, New Year's, Hanukkah.
Kwanzaa, Ramadan.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Thank you for listening, everyone. If you want to check us out in the meantime and you're bored and you want to, you know, follow us, you can find us at Facebook at Med Crimes Podcast.
You can find us on YouTube by searching Med Crimes Podcast. And if you want to see Devin's furrowed brow, That's the place to be.
It was furrowing.
Tonight. It was furrowing.
You can search for us on Instagram at MedCrimes Podcast.
If you want to become a Patreon and join our lovely family of Patreons and help to keep us going, you can find us at www.patreon.com/MedCrimes Podcast. It's fun there.
You can send us any crazy stories, ideas, comments, suggestions at medcrimes@gmail.com.
Stay safe out there, you guys.
Closing out season 3.